Mr. Watson, Reel 10. We got to the point where getting to the end of the time at Epes. What happened next then?
When the regiment had been equipped with Comets, I incidentally had no training at all on the Comet. I had no knowledge of the inside of the Comet. Suffice to say that they were an English tank, and I think they had a better engine and a far better gun than any of the American tanks. I don't think they were as roomy inside as the Shermans. Obviously, I had a look in them. When the whole of the regiment had been equipped with the Comets and done their initial training, they decided to have a field exercise with the Comets, and we moved from Ypres to a place called, if my memory serves me right, Montaigu, Montaigu, which is a sort of Belgian Lourdes. I think Montaigu means a sharp point or sharp mountain, Aigu being French for sharp or pointed. This was a town which, and I had never been to Lourdes, which I assumed to be very, very similar to Lourdes, with hundreds of shops selling crucifixes and the various paraphernalia of the Roman Catholic Church. But we did our training in that area. We were stationed, I can't remember whether we were stationed in a camp or in billets at Montaigu, but we spent several days, possibly a couple of weeks in that district, while the regiment did training with the new Comets, field training. Whether they did any actual firing or not, I don't know. But once again, being in the scout cars, there wasn't a lot for us to do. Our armament hadn't altered, nothing had altered with us. At the end of that time, I went on leave back to England for 10 days. I was probably one of the last in the region to go on leave.
Is that because your name began with W?
Well, I assume so. I was always last in the paper, right? And now and again, one will get an orderly officer whose name probably began with W too. And he would say, right, today we will start with the Y's and we will go to the A's. But in 9 cases out of 10, the orderly officer has always started with A, and sometimes it took them an hour to get one's pay. And by the time I received my pay, the rest of them had spent it in the matter. I went on leave back to England, and of course, bear in mind this is February, March, and the conditions weren't very good. I had quite a pleasant leave up in London, went to see one or two bits of classical music, and was royally entertained by everybody. I went back after the regiment had crossed the Rhine. So I saw none of the action in the early stages of the crossing of the Rhine. I don't believe the regiment had much action in the early stages of the crossing of the Rhine. Nevertheless, I was appalled to see the immense destruction of the first German town that I'd seen. I was lucky.
Can you describe what it was like? I mean, what impressions it gave you?
Completely flattened. There were absolutely no buildings standing at all. There were one or two people, German civilians, still living, as far as I could make out, in basements or cellars, but very, very few. There was a lot of wreckage around of the gliders and the rest of it that had landed by the glider regiment, infantry and gliders. And the damage to, having seen damage in previous towns and villages in France, and bearing in mind that I never actually went through Connell, which I think was fairly severely damaged, but the damage in the villages and towns of France compared with that of the first German town through which I went was absolutely minimal. The town was absolutely flattened. Whether it was by shell fire or bombing or a combination of the two, I don't know. But it really impressed me. I thought, well, if that's the rest of Germany's like that, then it's hard luck for the Germans. It wasn't, nevertheless. Now, I was lucky in that when I went back from leave, because of the storms in the Channel, we were delayed. Why was I lucky? Because I missed the 1,500 weight truck which had been sent to pick those people returning from leave, to pick them up. Now, that same 1,500 weight truck, in trying to rejoin the regiment, went down the wrong road, and two of the people in it were killed, and I think one was captured. So I was lucky in the respect that I didn't get that 1,500
weight truck. So it was ambushed by the Germans?
Well, it took the wrong road. It was ambushed by the Germans, yes. So I was extremely fortunate there. That's the first bit of good fortune I had. I had two bits of good fortune, then a bit of misfortune on my return. I rejoined the regiment when, round about April the 1st, April the 2nd, it must have been middle of March, I can't remember, but I've looked at the army paper and the leave doesn't appear to be in there, but I know that I went when they crossed the Rhine and I came back after they were probably 30 or 40 miles into Germany before we got incidentally to the Teutoburger Wald, where they were involved in some fairly heavy fighting. When I got back, I got a polite rollicking from Harry Axe, and he said, "You told me that substitute driver was a good driver. He's bloody awful. Look what he's done to your scout car." And the scout car had both the wings missing and the boxes on the wings, so he obviously wasn't as good a driver as and Harry Axton believed I was. He was pleased to see me, nevertheless. I can't remember a lot about Germany. I do remember that a lot of the people we captured or killed were either extremely young or extremely old. A lot of them weren't proper infantry. I think some of them had been training as submariners. Others were all sorts of hotch-potch assemblies, which I suppose the Germans had thrown into the line to try to stem the tide. In some ways I felt sorry for them because we were reasonably equipped with everything. They were by then getting short of petrol. I don't think they were ever short of ammunition. They always had plenty of ammunition. And bear in mind, I always felt, I don't know if other members of the regiment have told you this, I always felt that the German arms were in every way superior to the British arms.
In what way?
Well, their rifles, for a start, were always automatic. Their machine guns had a far higher rate of fire. Their artillery and anti-tank guns, notably the 88, were infinitely superior to anything that the British had, even at the end of the war. I feel that what we should have done was capture some 88s in the Western Desert and copy them exactly, and we would have been a lot better off than we were. Their tanks were better than they had petrol. Their half tracks were a good idea for speedy transport of infantry over the country. Their pistols and small arms were superior to ours. In fact, in every way, I felt their arms and armament were superior to ours. Whether that's a point to be applauded or decried, I know not. That's been more of a Pacific notion. We hadn't spent the money and time on developing these arms and armament. Perhaps it's applauded in respect of the British and not the other way around. But it's a fact of life that we were up against it as far as fighting was concerned. The country in Germany was fairly good, obviously, as we went through the villages, if they didn't show any washing as we termed it, in other words, white flags, they were shot up by the advancing tanks, because we were fairly close behind the tanks the whole time. I can remember them trying to dive bomb a bridge. When we were all with Stuka, the Stukas, the Junkers 87s, which seemed to me a very, very ponderous and slow-moving plane, perhaps at that stage of the war they were. I can also...
What do you remember of that Stuka attack?
They were very, very ponderous and slow, and when they did try to dive bomb, they were subject to, we were equipped, as well as the 300 barrel, and we also had a .5 barrel, which had a longer range, and I don't think these Stukas were any match for the anti-aircraft fire that developed.
Were they shot down, or did
they were shot down, most of them, yeah. They were shot down. They tried hard to bomb the bridges, but they were very, very ineffective.
And what about this Teutoburger Wald?
Well, I can't remember a lot about it because we didn't advance up the Teutoburger Wald, but I do know that the infantry and the regiment had a hard time of it in the forest up there. I was fully conscious of that because obviously driving in terms of stuff and being on a regimental net, one used to hear everything that was going on. The whole time one was fully conscious of everything that was going on. That's the beauty of a regimental net. When I got back from leave, incidentally, my best friend, Corporal Wedderburn, who came from Larding, Northumberland, had been killed at a place called Legden. The wife, his mother and father, a letter of condolence.
How did you go about that? I mean...
Well, with some difficulty. Incidentally, I would add that I'd, owing to my experiences, I had become an agnostic. I saw no evidence of the Lord, and it's something that I never altered for the whole of the rest of my life. I became a confirmed agnostic. In fact, I had it entered into my army paybook. An agnostic being one who doesn't know, compared with an atheist who states that there is definitely no God. But I'm not big-headed enough to say there is no God, but I am a non-believer in Christianity as such. Non-believer in the life hereafter. Nevertheless, I did with some difficulty write this letter of condolence because I'd known the chap for probably 2 years. And he was...
What was his name again, sorry?
Wedderburn,
Alf Wedderburn.
Yeah, Alf Wedderburn. W-E-D-D-E-R-B-U-R-N. He came from Blythe.
And what could you say? Was it to his parents or his wife? Or?
Well, his parents, I understand that his parents were not his parents. In other words, he had been an adopted child. The Kathleen Cookson books will figure in with a lot of the adopted child business and the North East. And she is very relevant. To matters of that sort. I think he was an adopted child. Nevertheless, he was loved because when I visited his house with him when we were on leave one time, I could tell that his adopted mother and father really thought the guy was lovely. He was a very, very nice chap.
What sort of thing did you say? I mean, you might not remember.
I can't remember what I've said now, but they were obviously of a religious persuasion. I protracted the letter by stating that I, really enjoyed his company and friendship during the whole time that I'd known him. And that I was very, very sorry that such a tragedy had occurred so late in the war, because I can't forget he'd gone right through from the beginning. He was in the same reinforcement unit as I was right from the beginning. So.
Did you tell the truth about what had happened to him, or did you just cover it up?
I didn't know what had happened to him. I think he was killed by machine gun fire while outside his tank. I told them that he didn't suffer. He was killed instantaneously.
But was he? I mean,
he was. I handed out to the people that actually, if he'd have been in the tank, he'd have been all right, but he was killed. And as I've already said, the rate of machine gun fire by the Germans was very, very quick. And I mean, if you stood in the way of the machine gun, you didn't see much chance.
Anything else that happened? You said you had two bits of luck and then one bit of bad.
The second bit of luck was that I was driving a scout car along and there was a shell burst and a piece of shrapnel went through the windscreen inside to the scout car. And then it didn't hit me and it didn't hit the officer. Now, as the size of the windscreen was only about 12 inches by 6 inches and my face was fairly close to it the whole time, that must have been very, very fortunate, because if it had hit me in the head, that would have been curtains. So that was the second bit of luck while we were going through Germany. That was in the daytime when a shell landed.
What about you, as you went through the country, how the actual German civilians met you?
Well, the German civilians had all disappeared. They all kept their heads down. I mean, when I saw the... I think a lot of the Germans had cellars or basements, and I rather fancy... Because I went into one or two German places that had been they were on fire or smashed to smithereens, and when you went down into the cellars and basements, there was all the bottled fruit and all the jams and everything that they set by, presumably from the previous summer for the winter. And needless to say, I acquired some of it. Generally, they had basements.
So you just didn't see them much?
No, very, very, very few.
Was there much?
I did on one occasion when we were advancing, we'd shot a wood up, and we brought out a German nurse with a red cross on, who suffered with rifle or machine gun fire, quite severely wounded, and I was very, very surprised to see a woman, that far in the front line, but she'd obviously been doing her duty as a first aid orderly or a stretcher bearer or something of that nature. But she was conscious, but quite severely wounded.
What about looting? As opposed to taking a bit of food, was there much of that?
I mean, bearing in mind that we were on the move all the time, I don't. I do remember I've got to get this fact straight, whether it was I think it was the quartermaster. He acquired a German car. He didn't have a vehicle, you see. And then he acquired a German car, which he used to drive around in. How he got the petrol for it, I don't know. But he definitely acquired a German car. But I never saw any looting as such. I acquired from the dead and from the prisoners several pistols which I intended to sell later on to the Americans, who give you anything up to £10, and bear in mind £10 in those days was a lot of money for a genuine Mauser or Luger pistol. I acquired several of those. I never sold them though, because when I was wounded, I was still in the scout car. I also acquired some smaller pistols too, very tiny ones. I don't know what they were used for, but they were a small sidearm. But looting as such, I can remember none. I can't remember anybody going into places and stealing, for instance, a radio or a musical instrument. There literally wasn't room in the tents for that sort of thing. There may well have been. I mean, the looting or the acquiring may well have been more rife in the A echelon and in those lorries that had a little bit of extra room. But there was certainly none in the people at the front.
Now, what's the next thing you remember then?
The advance being halted because of the Belsen camp.
What do you remember of that?
Well, I can remember that we were halted. I can remember seeing the chaps come forward with a white flag. We were conducted to brigade headquarters. They were Hungarians, incidentally, not Germans. They were Hungarians, but they came towards the deputation with a white flag, and they were accompanied to brigade headquarters. What happened after that, I don't know, but I know that we were stationary for a day or so. In other words, we made no advances at all while this negotiation was going on. I believe what happened was that we said that we won't advance. Their excuse, incidentally, was they didn't say there was a concentration camp there, they said it was a prisoner of war camp, where a lot of the inmates had typhus and typhoid, and they didn't want the inmates to escape into the surrounding countryside and spread the typhus and typhoid. A tall story. Most of them weren't in the condition to stand, let alone walk and escape. Nevertheless, the negotiations went on. I understand that what we asked for was a retirement back to a certain line, and I don't think the Hungarians would agree with this. And the war, therefore, was resumed. And I think, in effect, we encircled and went past Belsen quite rapidly. I don't think there was any real hold up or resistance. And there was a lot of woods surrounding Belsen. I can remember we shot up a German Volkswagen with an officer from the Kriegsmarine in it. He was dead. I found a good camera under his.
Now, who shot him up?
Seat. Well, he was probably shot up by, not by me, but by a tank that was passing and just left at the side of the road. I found a good camera under his seat, which I acquired. He obviously had no further use for it. When I developed it later on, or when the films in it were developed, there were some films of himself and his family. That camera was a Voigtländer. Voigtländer. Quite a good camera, I saved it subsequently up in London.
Now, much else before, because you were wounded on, the 15th of April. Anything else before that?
I can't remember a lot. We advanced fairly readily through these towns and villages with all the washing hanging up. It was very, very, the country generally was very, very flat. I suppose it's the Great German Plain. We didn't find any real features. The kind of the big rivers obviously had to be negotiated. But what happened, the first squadron went over a river called the Wiortz, W-I-O-R-T-Z-E, at a place called Muden, M-U-D-E-N. The squadron went over the river. The bridge over the river was then blown. And the squadron was left in the village without the rest of the regiment being able to follow. Harry Axton and I were told to go up and inspect the blown bridge and report back the circumstances. So to inspect the broken bridge, we had to get out of the scout car. Now, when we were out of the scout car, some shells landed. Whether the shells came from the Germans, our own artillery, our own tanks, I do not know. Nevertheless, they exploded all around the scout car. I got down with the head at the back of the wheel of the scout car, my hands over my head. Nevertheless, I got hit by a bit of shrapnel in the leg, which hit the sciatic nerve. I didn't feel the wound in the leg, and the sciatic nerve was dead and the foot went numb. And so I thought I was hit in the foot, and I said to the chaps who came to assist me, I've been hit in the foot. And they took my boot off and they said, well, we can't find anything here. And then they looked around and they found a hole in my battle dress trousers, but they found no evidence of the shrapnel. There was just a small wound on the surface. I was then put into an ambulance.
Now, the officer wasn't hit then?
The officer, no. Harry Axton, once again, was lucky. He wasn't hit. So I had to say goodbye to my scout car, all my revolvers, and my other things, and all I took with me was my small pack. Now, I was put on a stretcher. Now, stretchers are not designed for people over 5'10" in height. If you're on a stretcher and you're stretched out straight and you're over 5'10", either your head is off the top of the stretcher or your feet are off the bottom of the stretcher. You have a choice. I was on that stretcher incidentally for 7 days and nights. The same stretcher. What happened, I was put into an ambulance, RASC, which was the driver, RAMC order in the back. This was at 7:30 at night that I got wounded. I was put into this ambulance and we had to go back to the casualty clearing station. Now, bear in mind that our advances have been fairly rapid. And everything such as casualty clearing stations or hospitals was a long, long way behind us. So we had to drive back through the night. Now, the RASC chap who was driving didn't have a lot of knowledge of the road, but once again, having sorted out the maps and knowing the roads as I did, the driver wanted to go down the road to Belsen. So I said to the RAMC bloke, no, we can't go down that road. I said, that's where the camp is. We don't want to go to where there's a camp in case there's still some people around it. We didn't have knowledge that the camp had been liberated. All we knew was that there was a camp there. We'd advanced beyond it.